You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 20 May, we've got Palo Alto results after market close. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we chat with Gary Arnold, CEO of Astral. Results, revenue higher, but cost pressure saw profits falling markedly. Bianca Buertas from Citadel Global, how managing the Rand volatility could be a competitive advantage. And Nikki Giles from Prescient, talking umbrella funds and how they can help smaller companies. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Absa staff face disciplinary action over information leaks. None of the former whistleblower channels were followed. Business Day, Nissan SA plant battles through tough calls in Chinese onslaught. Roslyn plant may be shuttered in consolidation move. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P and NASDAQ both up 0.1%. The East is mostly green, Sydney's down 0.3%, Tokyo 0.4% higher, Hong Kong up 1.3% and Tencent 0.2% up. Commodities mostly green, gold futures the red at $3,214, Brent is $65.55, platinum $1,005, palladium $980. The Rand is 18.10, Bitcoin 105,800, and top 40 opening call, expecting 100 points up. It's our fifth birthday. We're doing a breakfast next Friday, the 30th, in Rosebank, Johannesburg. If you'd like to win a ticket, email us studio@moneyweb.co.za. The question today, name one of the people on my MoneyWeb Now team.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Gary Arnold, CEO at Astral. Results for 6 months ending March saw revenue up 3.5%, HEPS down 54%, a R2.20 dividend. There was no dividend declared at the interim stage last year. Gary, appreciate the time. If we start with poultry, it actually saw revenue increasing, but prices were under pressure, down 3.1%. What's driving prices lower? Is that supply? Is it just a consumer under pressure?
Simon, yes, you know, prices, what we saw significant price deflation through last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the comparable period in the first six months of 2024, we had relatively good pricing at that time, which resulted in a good or robust set of results for the first half of 2024. So off a high base, significant price deflation through last year in frozen chicken in particular, mm-hmm. in that category, which led us going into the first half of this financial year on the back foot. And I say the back foot because we had lower prices than in the same time or at the same time in the comparable period. But of course, feed prices up on this 6 months, you know, with the drought last year, the smaller maize crops, so maize prices were up, input costs up, inflationary costs, wages, personnel costs, packaging, and then of course, energy costs up. You know, we still, at a municipal level, suffer from the costs of service delivery issues with water and electricity. So that all in the mix, Astral feel this through this first 6 months, subsidizing the cost of producing chicken with negative margins on broilers, minus 1.1%.
Ouch. You mentioned maize. We've got an expected larger maize crop for this year. That should help. I mean, that certainly that's one of your inputs. It's not energy, but it is one that should help in the second half and into FY26.
Certainly, Simon. The harvest season is late with all the late rains that the country experienced. So the farmers have got off to a late start harvesting this crop. We're into that now. And I think as that harvest pressure comes to bear and there's more maize, physical maize deliveries that come to market, you know, we'll see prices soften further. I think we're trading, the market is, SAFEX is trading well above export parity. So I do expect a bigger crop to bring some price benefit to maize. We have seen that in the last couple of weeks, but I think, you know, has some way to go with a stronger rand. Obviously, SAFEX always taking a proxy of the Chicago Board of Trade. Chicago prices are good. You know, the world's balance sheet for coarse grains is healthy. So certainly no unexpected reactions from Chicago. SAFEX pricing, though, I think will trade local fundamentals soon as this current harvest comes in.
Gotcha. And that, of course, feeds into the feed division. That had a good year, but you do say in the results some of that was sort of restocking after the avian flu and therefore sort of getting the sizes back to normal.
Yes, you know, in the comparable period, so the first 6 months of 2024, we had lower breeding stock levels, mm-hmm. and that was on the back of the bird flu in 23. But as we've repopulated the breeders, and that was completed last year, those feed volumes have come back to the feed division, of course. And then there's also been an opportunity from December, January onwards, Simon, to place additional broilers. And so we did that in anticipation of lifting our production numbers, which we have done from around mid-March. So all of that contributing additional feed volumes to the feed division. But we did sell more feed into the external market. The large part of those, the growth in those volumes going into that commercial layer sector, which was also hard hit by bird flu in 23. So those volumes returning to meadow feeds. Mm-hmm. And then we secured additional volumes in the pork livestock value chain.
Avian flu, bird flu, it remains a risk to the poultry industry locally and even globally. I mean, Brazil has had an issue over the weekend with an avian flu outbreak. Are we clear of it at this point in time in South Africa?
Simon, it's difficult to say we're clear of it at any point in time. It's a global issue, you know. Yeah. So bird flu in that context is affecting many poultry-producing countries around the world. Europe had a very hard winter season, as did the US. So, of course, with Brazil now being the latest casualty, you know, it creates some concern. I mean, we're going into this winter season on tender hooks. We can only, you know, do as much as we can, and that's the highest levels of biosecurity in place on our farms. Being vigilant every single day for the disease, mm-hmm. and with no compensation yet offered by government, no vaccination or progress on the vaccination front. Of course, the industry remains vulnerable to bird flu infection, but we just have to manage what we have, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, that lack of compensation, other markets, the US most certainly compensates. Last question. I mean, cash generation remains strong. Balance sheet remains strong. A tough period, but you still do good cash generation.
You know, Simon, notwithstanding the pressure on operating profits, you know, we had good improvement in our working capital. We had good sales through the festive period. Unfortunately, not at the right price, but we sold out of stock. So that helped us to reduce our poultry inventory considerably. Mm-hmm. So poultry stock levels are now, you know, comfortable. So we produced, you know, a good couple of hundred million rand in cash that was tied up in poultry stock. That's obviously flowed into the balance sheet. But, you know, there is a lot of focus on working capital, still looking to build those cash reserves further on the balance sheet. Mm-hmm. You know, we've always said Ashland has always been well known for shielding itself against any, you know, shocks in the poultry industry, and you need cash on the balance sheet for that. So certainly focus with the team remains on good capital allocation, you know, being prudent with capital expenditure, making sure we spend it in the right places, and keeping a firm hand on working capital, yeah. Simon.
And then that certainly has been a hallmark of Astral. We'll leave it there. Gary Arnold, CEO Astral, appreciate the time.
A poll today, chatting with Gary there. A tough set of numbers, always moving parts. So chicken production is hard. Our question is, do you hold this chicken producer? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Bianca Bortis, Director at Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the time. It's tough being a small business, doing business globally. You've got trade wars, you've got policy uncertainty. Perhaps more importantly, you had the Rand almost 20 against the dollar last month. Now it's around 18. I imagine for small businesses, I mean, even for big, but those sort of moves in the currency must be massively challenging.
Good morning, Simon. You're definitely right. You know, especially look at the rand. We've seen significant volatility. We've seen moves of up to 3 to 5% in a matter of days. And it's really volatility that no one in the market has become familiar with as yet. And I think a lot of businesses are struggling to wrap their heads around exactly the scope of the volatility, but also the duration that we could see this volatility for. And I think a lot of them thought it's going to be a little blip on the radar and then it's going to dissipate. But that's definitely not the sense that we are getting.
I imagine a lot of, and this isn't poking at businesses because I think everyone does it, almost a reactive approach to currency. And I suspect a lot of it is that when the rand suddenly weakens, a lot of people might panic, which is the worst thing. We need to be more proactive.
I think you see that across the board in markets, you know, people doing normal investments, but definitely in businesses hedging their exposure in currency. We often see these businesses hedging their entire exposure at the worst possible moment because they go into this panic and they go from, okay, how do we preserve profits to going, how do we avoid further losses? And it's normally right on that turning point. And it's a bit of an anomaly, but it do happen. And unfortunately, you know, we have a giggle about it. But for these small businesses, it's life or death. This is literally the difference between their business sinking or making it throughout the rest of the year.
And that's just it. I mean, FX planning, if you sort of manage, if you have FX as part of your business, needs to be, I mean, it needs to be a part of your entire strategy. And you don't have the skills, then you need to get the experts such as yourselves in. But you need to be aware of it and constantly managing, not so much the currency, we can't, but managing how you manage that, your hedging.
Yes, so I think it's more about risk management than trying to manage and trade the currency. You should always focus on your core business as your core business, but you should definitely start looking at FX as an integral part of how you manage your overall exposure in your business and how you take that into consideration when it comes to your profit margins and whether you have the policies in place to make sure that you are significantly covered for a massive blowout event. How do you deal with it? How does your finance team deal with it? But also potentially having the systems in place to understand what happens to your business and to your current exposure on your books should you see a 2% blowout or a 3% blowout.
That's a great point. I knew a business, this is going way back, they were importing everything they sold, they imported. They always just did forward. So when they got an invoice for something on its way from the UK, they went and bought forward. I imagine it's a much more multidimensional approach, though, to that hedging process. There's a lot more to it. There's spot, there's options. It doesn't just have to be forwards.
It doesn't just have to be forwards. I think why forwards are so popular is really because it gives you certainty of outcome. You know exactly what you're going to get or what you're going to pay the moment that the money needs to be paid or be received. And while it gives you certainty of outcome, for importers, it's really, really expensive. And for exporters, you get the benefit of the forward points, but you often lose out on a weakening in the rand, for instance. What you want to try and do is build in flexibility into your risk management policy that leaves room for things like bulk hedging, dynamic hedging, making use of a combination of forwards, options, and spots within that framework, obviously dependent on your own tenures of your payments, your own underlying risk that you're willing to take, but making sure that you are approaching it in a portfolio approach rather than just a single dimensional approach.
Yeah, and perhaps even more so if you've got multiple currencies that you're dealing in. Is, I suppose, mastering this and being on top of it, you know, the impact on your business, understanding and mastering a portfolio of hedging tools, I mean, it almost becomes a competitive advantage.
It definitely becomes a competitive advantage. When you are looking at extremely competitive markets, this can really be the differentiator in terms of where you price your products. If you continuously have to go and adjust your pricing, not only do you alienate the wholesalers or the resellers of your product, you also alienate the consumer because they can't rely on your underlying pricing. But you also get to an environment where you have to continuously raise prices when the rand enters terrain that's unfavorable to your business.
Yeah, and it's that sudden changing. And as I said, when it was, what, almost 20, just, what, 6-7 weeks ago, a whole bunch of prices go up and then they come back down as a consumer. That's no fun at all. We'll leave it there. Bianca Butters, Director, Citadel Global. Always appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Nikki Giles, Head of Strategy at Prescient Fund Services. Nikki, appreciate the time. Umbrella funds, I have to be perfectly honest, I hear this phrase umbrella funds all the time. It occurred to me in prepping for this interview, I'm not quite sure what they are. What is an umbrella fund?
Hi, Simon, and thanks for having me. Well, an umbrella fund essentially is a retirement fund that's been designed to pool a number of different participating employers together. So instead of an employer having to design and manage their own retirement fund for their employees, they can get together with a large number of employers and make use of essentially scale.
I get your point, because if I'm a giant corporate with, I don't know, 20, 30, 50, 100,000 staff, then I can set this up myself. But if I'm a smaller, maybe just a few dozen staff, the complexity of running retirement solutions for my staff is probably overwhelming and beyond the real ability of a small business.
I think that's correct. I think, you know, going back maybe 15 years ago, you saw a lot of standalone small retirement funds because it wasn't that intricate and complex. I think over the years, we've had a large change in regulation that's added significant burden to the administration process around retirement funds. And that's where these smaller SMEs are really struggling if they have standalones, and why it makes sense that they would be looking at a solution like an umbrella fund.
100%, because you know there's so much to it. It's not just a bit of paperwork. There's trustees, there's annual statements, there's compliance, treating people fairly. It has become, and in many ways rightfully so, a complex process to manage.
Agreed. And you know, in the last 2 years alone, with the introduction of TFUPOT and all that has done, it really has become a burden on the administration of pension funds.
I hadn't thought of that, because previously I was putting money in and then maybe one day I change jobs, maybe I retire, maybe pass away, and then there's some paperwork. But that's fairly infrequent. TFUPOT, I imagine, we've certainly seen it across the industry, has suddenly put a lot more burden.
Essentially, I mean, what TFUPOT has done is taken a retirement solution that, you know, you access, as you said, when you leave your employment, you retire or resign, and made it something that you can access on an annual basis. So it's become much more of almost a retail savings product for employees. Yeah. And the other issue that it introduced is this leftover pot that has to stay and be retained within the pension funds until you do retire. So with default preservation, it means that a lot of these pension funds are going to be sitting with ex-employees in them.
Ah, yeah, of course, of course. And the one thing, I mean, some folks out there will be saying, hang on, an umbrella fund, couldn't I just get my own retirement annuity? The difference is a retirement annuity is something that I personally, in my own capacity, set up, whereas umbrella funds are really being done via the business I work with.
That's correct. I mean, your business may opt to go into what's referred to as a group retirement annuity. Mm-hmm. But essentially, it is a retirement annuity. But largely, retirement annuities are there for the individual to decide if they want to save, whereas these employer-based ones would be the umbrella fund. And it's much easier for an employer to administer as well, because the employer is not going to want to have to send money to 20 different retirement annuities that the employees have selected, versus belonging to one umbrella fund where they just have to, you know, do one process for taking money from the salaries and passing those contributions across.
In a recent note you wrote, you were talking about the importance of employee benefit consultants. I, again, not heard of this. It makes immense sense, but help me understand. I mean, what would they bring to the table? What are their skill set and that they will help with the businesses?
Well, essentially, the employee benefit consultant is there to assist the employer in really navigating the field of these umbrella funds and the pension world. You know, not every employer is skilled in understanding pension fund legislation, what's required, and decoding some of the costs and benefits, essentially, from these funds. So when you're trying to compare, you know, multiple of different umbrella funds and their fees, it's really difficult if you haven't seen it before. So these employee benefits consultants are there to assist the employers and guide them and then try and match what the employer is looking for their employees with what's available in the market.
And that's a great point. You're an SME, you decide to do something for your staff. I think in many cases you have absolutely zero idea where to start. Your expertise is, I don't know, whatever it is you might do, and they can come in and bring it. And I suppose they can not tailor fit, but they will have a view of the sort of the entire landscape and find what will work for that particular business.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they're obviously dealing with umbrella funds on a daily basis, And so they're aware of what's on offer. And I think if you are looking for an umbrella fund, I would definitely suggest, if you are not already in financial services as a business, and even if you are, that a good employee benefit consultant is really going to help you find the right fit for you and your employees.
I like your point. I mean, even if you are in the industry, they probably know a lot more because it's that nicheness to it. We'll leave it there. Nikki Giles, Head of Strategy, Prescient Fund Services. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Nick Kunze around the Moody's downgrade of US debt. We asked, how much of a worry is this? Half said, not much, we knew already. A third said, it depends if they can cut debt. The rest said, very bad. This podcast is brought to you by Standard Up Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Is Alphabet spending too much on AI?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.